What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
And we are brought to you, as always, by Sprott Money, Canada's leading precious metals dealer since 2008. It's not just gold seen gains. Silver demand is set to exceed 1 billion ounces by 2025, driven largely by its use in electronics and renewable energy industries. Plus, silver, most affordable ways for new investors as well to start building a portfolio. Use a promo code PUCKSON7 for $10 off your first purchase. Visit SprottMoney.ca. That's SprottMoney.ca for more. PUCKSON7, Ryan Payton, Victoria Matiash. We're back. Later on in the show, we will be joined by ESPN reporter Emily Kaplan. Ooh, you know much more than I do, but you know, and she's one of the best at what she does. You know that, like you are too.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Yeah, so she's going to dive into a bunch of different things too, little tidbits that we may not have known about the Jacob Trouba deal and all that stuff months ago in Detroit and all that type of thing. So we'll dive into that. We'll go west in a bit too. We'll talk Four Nations. Let's begin in the east. And yeah, the biggest news, I guess, Vic, coming out earlier on this week or last week, I guess, because this is Monday the 9th of December, was the Jacob Trouba deal. To me, it's not so much who he went to. It's all the things that happened leading up to it and the day and how people are saying there's a loophole in the system and it's a threatening from the Rangers to Trouba. Anyway, your thoughts on this and then I'll come in after.
Well, first of all, Chris Drury did act a little jammy. I think we can all agree on that, but he also didn't break any rules. So this is my, I say this all the time. Don't hate the player, hate the game. If you don't like the idea of being able to maneuver and put a player on waivers to move them, which was threatened to do if Trouba did not agree to go to the Anaheim Ducks. If you don't like that, then change the rule in the next CBA. Like, that's all I have to say about that. So the fact is now Trouba is with the Ducks, but what's happened with the Rangers with Barkley Gaudreau in the summer, and now with Trouba, there is going to be the question now if players are going to want to sign in New York with a partial no movement clause. You're either going to go all in to make sure you're protecting yourself with a complete no trade ironclad clause, or you're not. But the Rangers are making their bed and they dumped $8 million in salary, and that's what they wanted to do. So I don't know. Here we are.
Anaheim takes on all the salary, as you did say.
That surprised me. That part surprised me.
And you know what as well? I mean, I think he has 1 year left on the contract. Mm-hmm. So he has 1 year to go. So he'll become a free agent after the 25-26 campaign. And so you look at why Anaheim did this. I mean, what are they looking at him down the road? Are they going to re-sign him? Are they going to give him whatever he wants? And I know his wife is happy to move there. And part of the reason why he said no, I mean, there was discussions that he was going to go to Detroit in the offseason, but he wanted to support his family. I believe his wife is completing her doctor residency or something like that. So he didn't want to just get up and leave. Yeah, and I totally get that. He said, I would do it 100% for family any other way. What I didn't like about the whole thing is just, again, how, as you said, and you make a great point, it has to do as well with the whole LTIR thing. Mm-hmm. It's in the CBA. So if you don't like it,
Change the CBA, renegotiate it.
Right. It is what it is. I just didn't like how it ended like that and the threat of, hey, we're going to place you on waivers or you're going to get traded. So you choose.
Yeah.
That is nasty. And it's a business and I get it. And I'll tell you something. The Rangers, they played the Kraken, I think, the other night, or if I'm not mistaken. They didn't look great. This trade is not solving the Rangers' issues. This trade is not solving the Rangers' issues.
Well,
that's my point.
They beat Pittsburgh right away. So when Trouba
it's
was
Pittsburgh.
Traded, yes, they
it's
beat
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, but they did not look very good against the Kraken. No. First of all, Jacob Trouba is a good defender, Ryan. He's a good defender. He's not an $8 million defender.
No. His numbers
he's a
are down.
Good defender.
His
he's
numbers
a nasty
are down.
Player out there.
He is, and I actually saw this statistic, and you can make as much into this as you want, put as much stock as you want. Jacob Trouba is one of the hard, if not the hardest hitter. Radko Gudas is hard too. Now they're teammates.
They're on the same team now.
Wow. Remember the Legion of Doom line in Philly with LeClaire, Michael Renberg, and Lindros? Now you got the Legion of Something pair on defense in Anaheim. But Trouba's hits per game, they went down from at 7.58 on, but over 7.5 last season. Now it's about 4.5. That may not mean much to anybody, but the hits are down, and the points are down. I just think it was just a marriage that needed to end in divorce months ago, right? Months ago. So quick thing on that, and then we'll go to Shesterkin. The last few captains in New York, Chris Drury, he was bought out to end his career. Ryan Callahan was traded. Ryan McDonagh traded. Jacob Trouba traded.
So you said it's a right. You don't retire as a Ranger if you're made a captain.
It's a rite of passage, as he said, to get traded. Okay, yeah. Igor Shesterkin, we finally know the contract that he has. He's the highest paid goalie in history, highest paid goalie right now in the NHL. Why it took this long? Well, maybe because they wanted to get Trouba off the books, but it's done.
It is done. And I don't know about the timing as much because they were always going to move Trouba anyways, and the money doesn't kick in until later. So, but still, maybe I thought the timing was quite entertaining, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. I will point out people were saying 12, 12 and a half, 13. He didn't get that. He got 11 and a half, which I thought was reasonable enough and to be expected. And it's nice that that's done as well.
Yes.
So, but the timing on Friday was really rather hilarious.
Oh, right.
See you later, Captain. Yeah. Here's your money, Igor.
Yeah. Here's your trouble. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. And I think there were four or five goalies. I think there were four. I did have it up here at some point, but I'll try to find it when you pick up the conversation. Oh, yeah, here it is. So put Carey Price aside. He's still at 10.5. Mm-hmm. So Bobrovsky at 10, Vasilevsky at 9.5, Hellebuck at 8.5, and Sorokin and Swayman both at 8.25. So those are your top five goaltenders. Now you're going to have Shesterkin beating that. I'm telling you, out of that list, I don't put Shesterkin ahead of Bobrovsky in talent. I don't put him ahead of Hellebuck in talent. I put him ahead of Sorokin and Swayman. But the amount of money that he is making, that's fine. And everyone says, oh, great playoff goaltender. Yeah, there's more fixes that need to be. If the Rangers don't do a lot in the next number of seasons with that contract, Vic, it's going to look like a terrible contract.
It is. It's going to, this is one of those things that foresight, right? We're going to see, we could look back depending on what happens to the cap in 5 years, we might look back on this and go, that was a smoking deal. Like he's totally worth the money. And we could also look back and said, okay, well, that was a bit of a poor signing. I will say this about Vasilevsky and Hellebuck. When they're renegotiating their next deals, they are going to get more money than Shesterkin. I think that goes without saying. I think the Rangers made a big point by not giving Shesterkin more than Panarin. I think that was a thing.
Yeah.
Right? And I do. Yes, I do. You don't think Vasilevsky's going to make more? You don't think Tampa's going to give him more?
I don't know. I don't know. I'd have to look at the ages again. And I mean, how old is Shesterkin? Late 20s? Am I right in that?
Yeah.
28, 29, something like that.
No, I think he's mid to late.
Mid to late. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. But you know what? When you have, it's like in any sport, when you have one making this, and then you're going to have in a few years one topping that. So as of right now, Shesterkin is the highest paid goaltender, or will be, of course, when the contract kicks in the NHL. Let me ask you something. The Capitals are playing incredibly well. Is Tom Wilson the toughest SOB in the NHL?
His face tells us as much.
What are you doing, Tom?
Ryan, if I got hit in the face with a puck like he did, first of all, he came back and played the rest of the game. Yep. And throughout the game, his face grew exponentially on the one side to the point that it became a little bit concerning in my mind. If that happened to me, there's no Vicky coming back to play the rest of the game. There's no Vicky playing hockey for months. There's no getting out of bed for at least a couple of weeks. Do you know how badly that hurts?
I don't want to know, but I'm sure it does. Yeah.
He credited adrenaline with being able to finish the game. And Tom Wilson also very sanely said he was going to feel pretty bad the next day, because those are those type of injuries that hurt a lot more a lot later.
Well, when he came off the ice and did the interview, I think it was with Sean McKenzie, he was like, oh boy, yeah, that doesn't look really good, does it? That's not a good first time I've seen. He also credited his dad. He said, look, my dad taught me, basically, if you can still get up and play, then get out and do it. And so
I'm a little so-so with that. I think sometimes we push people to play when they're uncomfortable.
But if he was cleared, it didn't hit him here, hit him here. And so he was fine. And I think if I was able to, and I was, if I was as tough as him, I'm not. if I was as tough and if I'm playing on a team that's fantastic and if I end up scoring two goals as well in the game, yeah, I'd go back and play. I'd absolutely go back and play.
I just get a little concerned with the macho undertones to that philosophy that if you can physically do it, you should be able to physically do it. In this case, Ryan, I'm fine with it. In this case, I'm fine.
And also Tom Wilson is very tough, right? He'll take a punch and another punch and then get back out the next time and fight the guy in the same kind of thing. So anyway, the Capitals, incredible. Tied atop the league, 40 points. They're tied in points with Minnesota, mm-hmm. tied in points with the Winnipeg Jets. I'm absolutely astonished that this is still going, and I don't want it to end. I know they're not going to probably get 100, 20, 30, whatever, but I really want to see this story keep writing itself.
And they're doing it without Alex Ovechkin right now.
I know.
And he's going to be back in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Isn't he? He's going to be back before Christmas, I think. And then we're going to see them again at full board. The fact they are accomplishing this, good goaltending, really good defensive lane, by the way, really good defense.
Yeah, they've only given up 74. They've scored the most, 109. Seriously. Scored the highest scoring team in the NHL. Let me ask you this.
They're going to be in the playoffs, and I wouldn't have said that.
If Ovechkin is okay to go, say before mm-hmm. Christmas, and the Capitals say they're still in the spot they're at, maybe second, third overall in the league. Anyway, they're not dipping. I wouldn't rush him back. I would keep him out. But then you have to think about, well, if he loses games because of his chase for Gretzky, which he wants to get this season. So what would you do? I mean, if he came to you saying, hey, I'm fine, but I could use a little bit more time, but I really want to catch Gretzky this year.
Alex Ovechkin is going to come back when Alex Ovechkin wants to come back. Yeah. He has earned that in this league, and he's going to tell them. And I think Alex Ovechkin would have come back 2 weeks ago if he could have. Going to come back as soon as he's... That guy is such a fierce competitor.
And he's going
to be back as soon as he can. I think the 20th of December against Carolina, that's my prediction.
Yeah, you've been on that. I think it's mm-hmm. going to be after. I think it's going to be after that. Okay. I do. I think it's going to be after Christmas. But he is, and he has knocked on wood. Well, we can't knock on it anymore because he got hurt. He's avoided injury, and it's incredible the way that he's played the mm-hmm. game in his career, how somebody like that has avoided serious injury, but he has. He's built differently than so is Tom Wilson, by the way. Anyway, Boston, are we getting on the bandwagon here?
No,
we're not. Okay, moving on.
It's Trump, smoke.
Okay. Smoke? That's
smoke
it?
Smoke and mirrors. Okay. It's smoke and mirrors. Look at who they beat. Okay, so yeah, I know. Boston has won some games recently. Good for them. And I understand they have a new guy behind the bench, and that's making a difference.
They won four in a row.
Four in a row. Against who, Ryan?
Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago.
Yep.
Philly.
Right. And Phily and Philly should have won that game.
Fair enough.
That was a fortunate turn of events for Boston.
Too much diving, Vic. Too much diving in that game.
There was
a torts.
I agree with him on that. I watched that matinee on Saturday, and the Flyers should have won that game. And the other three are three of the weakest teams in the NHL right now. So
I agree.
Smoke and mirrors, and their goal differential is still what, minus 12?
It's not very good. I look at it here, and it is at a scintillating minus 12. Yes.
Right. Scintillating minus 12. So I'm buying on the Capitals, but I'm not buying on the Bruins.
And they have Winnipeg on Tuesday. Tomorrow, mm-hmm. they have Seattle on Thursday, and then they have Vancouver on Saturday. So
they could go 0-3.
They could go 0-3. Mm-hmm. Toronto is healthy again. They've dropped a couple last couple of games, but they're getting bodies back. Matthews is back. Max Domi, I believe, is going to come back at some point soon. Max Pacioretty. Pacioretty is already back. Here's my thing: when this happens in sports with any team, I guess more specifically hockey, because you're playing so much. The young guys came up, the Mittens, and I can't even pronounce the Russian guy's name, but you know who I'm talking about. They came up and they just played their you-know-whats off. And they didn't have a care in the world.
Cabooses. They played their cabooses off.
Forecheck, backcheck, paycheck. That's mm-hmm. I think that's one of the greatest lines ever.
I love that kid.
And so
him.
When you bring in these other players who have not played well, I'm giving Domi a bit of a benefit of the doubt because I do believe that he was playing hurt and he finally mm-hmm. said, you know what, I can't do this anymore, so I've got to take some time. But if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Problem is, though, it was broke. They fixed it. Things were fine. And now they're going to go back to what they were doing before. I don't want to see anything happen with the team that doesn't continue moving them forward. So when you have the healthy bodies coming back, that's my concern. And it doesn't matter if Max Domi was injured before he did decide to take time off. He's had a very, very, in my mind, very disappointing season.
You would call it disappointing so far?
I would. Absolutely, I would. He looks engaged at times, but he doesn't look engaged at others. He barely shoots the puck. He should shoot the puck more. He's got a great shot. His first, I think, priority is to pass the puck. I just think he doesn't skate as fast as, say, Mint. He's not going hard into the corners like he used to. So that, again, is I'm thinking maybe he's injured. I'll give him a mulligan.
Okay. So we're going to give them a moment. I'm not putting too much weight on the two recent losses to Pittsburgh and Washington, They're going to lose some games or what have you. They have a pretty interesting schedule coming up this week, again, with some alleged weaker competition. So I think this week with four games on the slate, we're going to get a better sense of what they're going to look like and what they're going to look like going forward with the healthy bodies back, because they're all kind of getting pieced together. We just, Max Pacioretty's just been back for one game. So he's in the top six. So the how that works.
Yeah. The fact he didn't get a hat trick. I don't understand why he didn't get that. I mean, you come back, come on, you've been out there. I'm kidding. You mentioned the schedule. They have the Devils Tuesday, Anaheim, Detroit, and then Buffalo. So you're right.
So three of four. You need to go three and one.
Those are 6 points. They can get 6 points.
Jersey, we'll see. But the rest of them, right.
Toronto's healthy, getting healthy. Tampa is opening my eyes a bit more, Vic, with how they're playing. And they're kind of quietly going about their business. This is what Tampa does. This is what John Cooper does with whoever he has to coach. There's still a very good team without a Steven Stamkos. Kucherov was out. He came back. He's one of the best in the NHL.
Didn't he come back, though?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, that to me is right. So you have Kucherov. Patrick, Max, why couldn't you do what Kucherov did? I mean, come on. I know they're in different categories. But anyway, I'm starting to look at them and thinking, okay, this is a team we really have to look at now going ahead.
I think so, too. And if you look at where they are in the standings with the games in hand and the number of points they have and the goal differential and what Brandon Hagel is doing and what Gensel is doing and what Braden Point is doing and what other players are doing, they don't. I hate to say it. I love Steven Stamkos. They do not miss him, right?
No, they don't.
Not right now.
No, they don't.
The
only thing they miss about him is in the room and just being around. But they picked up right where he left off, and they haven't missed a point once.
Wins and loss call, I'm sure they missed the guy, but I'm saying wins and losses, they're not showing signs of missing him, is my point. And when we're talking about the Florida Panthers and the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Washington Capitals deservedly and Rangers getting a lot of attention lately, I just find once again, and I think we're all of us in this business are often guilty of this, of just overlooking the Lightning a little bit. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you turn around in February and they're in first place. I'm not saying that's going to happen.
No.
But right now they are playing really well.
It's almost like, but it's not Vegas. Vegas, you always know through 82 games, they're going to be great and they're going to go on to either win the cup or play deep into the postseason. They're kind of like that. They just go about their business. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, right. Vegas is back. Oh yeah, Vegas. So Tampa, same thing. I agree with you. Kucherov, 37 points. Hagel, 31. You talked about the goals. Braden Point with 18. Mm-hmm. Two away from 20 already.
Seriously.
It's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. So good on. Last one before we hit the break and go west. You put this down here. The Blue Jackets are competitive.
Explain that to me.
Convince me they're competitive. I know they're playing with emotion, but convince me.
They're not the easy out that they have been in the past right now. They are playing. First of all, they're winning some hockey games. They have a 500 record, Ryan.
Yes.
I know with the loser point thing, they don't. But they have a 500 record as the NHL acknowledges it. And they've got some dynamic. We can't get into that right now. We'll do 20 minutes on it. So
I was just about. Okay.
You caught me. Your face.
Caught me. Yeah. All right.
I love the way that Sean Monahan is performing.
Yeah.
Kirill Marchenko is just a joy to watch when he's on. He's a dynamite player. They don't get a lot of attention. Kent Johnson, young guy who's been waiting to blossom into his own, is starting to do that. There's a reason to watch the Blue Jackets again. Yeah. And with everything that organization has been through, but even without all of that, it's just nice to have them play some competitive. You don't want to see anybody stink game in and game out. It's depressing. And the fact that they're playing competitive hockey, they are winning hockey games, and they're not an easy out. I'm enjoying it.
The teams below them in the standings as of now, going into today, which is Monday, Ottawa, Buffalo, San Jose, Detroit, Anaheim, Montreal, Nashville, second worst in the league, 20 points. I just don't get it.
Neither do
I. And Chicago at 18 points. They've lost five in a row.
Before we break, one very quickly, getting back to the Shesterkin conversation, he is 20. He's 29, so you were right. I thought he was a couple years younger than that.
Yeah.
And Vasilevsky, his current contract expires in, I think it's three seasons.
Okay.
And I still think he's going to be in a position to make some dough. We forgot Hellebuck signed the big deal. Remember,
that's right. He's locked for a number of years. Yeah.
And he's probably looking at this now going, darn it.
Yeah. Right? He makes a good buck, but they make a hell of a buck. We should get some more bucks.
Oh, see, that was good A-. That was a solid A-.
A good A-.
Solid.
Anything in the A's is good. I didn't see any of those in school. Well, I kind of did. Not really. We'll take a break. Emily Kaplan joining us in a little bit, and we'll talk to her about everything to do with the NHL. We'll go west after this. Pucks and Seven, Ryan Payne, Victoria Maddiash, brought to you as always by Sprott Money.
Welcome back to Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Maddiash.
And we're brought to you by Sprott Money. We know every dollar counts. We're excited to team up with Sprott Money, Canada's leading precious metals dealer. Since 2008, they've been the go-to for investing in physical gold, silver, and platinum. Use the promo code PUCKSAND7, $10 off your first purchase. Visit SprottMoney.ca, that's S-P-R-O-T-T, money.ca, or give them a call. People do call at times. Vic loves when people call. I'm not joking. She loves the phone calls.
It's so much more efficient.
It is.
Back and
so don't text Sprott Money. Call them. 1-888-861-0775. ESPN reporter Emily Kaplan will join us in a bit. We'll go 77 seconds with Emily as well. So lots to get into with her. She's one of the best at what she does. Let's go west, Vic, and the LA Kings. You have down here on Fuego. I believe that means they're on fire. My goodness, coming off the last time they won, they beat a pretty good team in Minnesota. They look great.
They look really good. And Darcy Kemper's back now healthy, and he looked really great against Minnesota as well. But the fact that they're getting this done because they're playing great defense, which is the Kings brand, the fact that they're contributing, everybody's pitching in on offense right now.
Yeah.
Like, you've got players like Alex Laferriere contributing, Trevor Moore is scoring again. It's not just the Adrian Kempe show. Everything is just tickety-boo in LA right now. And they're like the Capitals for me. I don't quite understand completely why it's working. Not completely, but I'll believe people who tell me that they're just doing it right.
I'll tell you why it's working.
Why is it working?
Because they're not doing the 1-3-1 anymore.
Okay. But but they were effective at that, though.
But
they
not like this.
No, not like this.
Not like this. So this is a different thing. And I saw this article the other day, and I'm glad you put this in the lineup for the Kings, because, again, they've been fantastic. And you mentioned all these names. Laferriere, 21 points. Moore, Fiala was 17. Kopitar leading the team. He had 1,400 game two the other day, which was fantastic. 31 points. Kempe with 26. But I saw that because they've gone away from the 1-3-1, that's opened up their system more. And they've been able to generate chances in the offensive side of things, which they weren't able to do before. And it's also helped them defensively. So I don't really know how that actually is a thing and how it works. But the 1-3-1 system, Vic, to everybody, it was boring. I mean, I've been to LA a few times. So have you. Whenever I've talked to these people in the room, like, yeah, I mean, this 1-3-1, like, we have to do what the coach says. But to me, you're not going to be – this isn't the Jacques Lemaire of the 2000s with the Devils, right, where you shut everyone down in the neutral zone. This is hockey. This is fast. You give up chances at one end, you create chances at the other. You're not doing that with the 1-3-1 system. So I think it's because Coach Hiller's gotten away from that. I really do think the players are comfortable and that they're showing the results.
They are now. They are now. They're doing this without Drew Doughty too, which is quite something.
He's out of a boot. He's out of his walking boot, which is great. Yeah.
So they're only going to be better when he's back in the lineup.
Oh, exactly. Right? Exactly.
And big save, Dave. He had to fill in for Kemper for quite a while.
Yeah.
And outside of one very bad game, I believe it was against San Jose, or there was one very bad game. The rest of them, he has played really, really well. And I think that's also a credit to the blue liners in front of him. But he has held his own.
We discussed Boston, how the lack of strength of schedule, because they won the four straight games and the teams that they played. Not the case in LA. They beat Winnipeg. They beat Anaheim. Ottawa's a tough game too. They beat Ottawa. They beat Dallas, tough team. They beat Minnesota 4-1. So yeah, they're proving their worth against really top contenders.
They're not as good against weaker contenders. You notice that, or weaker competition, I should say.
And you see, doesn't that happen in sports?
All the time.
You go out, oh, we're playing so-and-so. Okay, well, we're fired up, but we're not really. We'll kind of play down to this. And then when you face Dallas's or the Winnipeg's, oh, are we really good? It happens.
Did you watch the Eagles play Carolina on Sunday?
I saw parts of it.
That was a fine example of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Derek Smith, who you know him and you met him, and he follows the podcast a lot. We were texting, and he's like, man, he goes, that almost killed me that whole game, but at least we got a win. I'm like, yep, it happens sometimes.
It does.
Anyway. The Vancouver Canucks, on the road, they're great. We'll get to that in a second. But Thatcher Demko is very close to coming back. So that means to me, watch out rest of Pacific.
If he's feeling good, this is one of those situations.
Don't rush him, though.
No, but they haven't. I don't think they have.
No.
I mean, the fact that Kevin Lankinen has played really well has given them the privilege and the opportunity to wait as long as they need to. They're not going to rush back their number one netminder. The fact that he served as a backup already is very promising. So I want to see it though. I want to see how he moves. I want to see his flexibility, his sense of anticipation, how he's reading. I want to see it before I get too excited about him coming back, because this was supposed to be one of the weirdest injuries that you could suffer. So when he's back in competitive play, and I know he feels good in practice, but we both know a real NHL game is a completely different bag of bananas, right? So we'll see how he reacts when he's back.
Yeah, no, it completely is. Vancouver has been playing very well. And the luxury, again, you mentioned Lankinen, and the luxury for a head coach when their top goaltender is out, if you can have somebody step in and do what he did and do what he's done, again, Thatcher, take your time. We're good. We've got you. But when you come back, certainly that's what we want. But Vancouver, you talked about the record away from home, 10-2-1. Look at some of these other records too, Vic, of these top teams. Minnesota, 11-2-3 away from home. Winnipeg's 11-6. The Capitals, 11-2-0. Devils, 11-4. Usually it's reversed. Usually the home. So that to me is a sign of a really good team. If you can go into someone else's building and you can win. So
there's no value to the home cooking anymore. You know what I mean?
Not.
I still think you want in the postseason, in the playoffs, you want to have home ice advantage.
Sure you do. Of course.
But really, in general anymore, looking at some of the road records like Vancouver's, but then you also start to ask, why are they not playing as well at home? Because they're not playing as well at home.
Right.
So there's an interesting twist there. Also, we're not even at the halfway point in the season. We're not even at the third way point in the season. I know we're coming up to it, but let's see. These numbers usually work themselves out. But credit to the Canucks. They are your Connor Garland, your Jake DeBrusks are scoring. Pedersen looks great again after so much criticism to start the season. So they're getting it done on offense as well.
I don't know if this was part of the expansion for the Vegas Golden Knights, if this was in kind of the contract. But maybe there's a little line that says, every season you're going to be good. You're going to win cups. You're going to lead the division. You're going to go deep. You're just going to be so – I think it's in there somewhere. Because every single time we've seen this team so far since they've been in the league, they're one of the best, if not the best. And lately, they beat Edmonton, they beat Anaheim, they beat Dallas. They got some tough games coming up against Winnipeg, Minnesota, Edmonton, Vancouver, etc. I'm not telling you. We had Gary Lawless on a number of weeks ago, and he was – not that he wouldn't be, but he was praising the Vegas Golden Knights. He was talking about all the players on the team and some of the ones maybe third, fourth line guys that don't get enough credit. Aiden Hill – he's going to Canada too for the Four Nations. He's playing. There's no weakness, Vic. It seems like we say this all the time. There's no weakness in this team again.
How much fun is Jack Eichel having right now?
I love him. Yeah.
I know you do. Him.
Sorry, Nate MacKinnon. I know, Nate, you're up there with me, but I'm really thinking Jack's going to take your place. I apologize. that was big for me to say. This is breaking news. Jack Eichel is ahead of Nate
MacKinnon. He's just having a heck of a time out there right now. I would still say the situation in net isn't on par with other teams in the league, but I'm with you that I don't think it matters. Well, because there's no Shesterkin or Hellebuck or Vasilevskiy on that team, right?
Yeah, but they're winning.
Aiden Hill, yes, they're winning. I said I don't think it matters that much, but I still would not say that there's no weakness. You said there's no weakness. I would say that Aiden Hill is fine. Samsonov is fine. They are good goaltenders. They are not great goaltenders.
So you know what, too, which is the Avalanche, when they won the Cup, they had Kemper, correct? And I think you and I talked a lot about it, whether we did this or in other shows and stuff. It was Kemper didn't have to be great. He just had to be good. So maybe this is the situation in Vegas. Vegas is just so good. Vegas is so good that the goalies don't have to be terrific every single night. So
it's almost like we start to ignore them a little bit because they just continue to win. And even when you said, we should talk about Vegas, I was like, right, we probably should.
Yeah, we should.
Because they're winning hockey games.
They're doing it again and again and again and again. St. Louis made a coaching change. They're playing a little bit better. I'm not a huge believer in coaching changes that make a difference, but maybe I'm going to switch my tune a little bit with this because Jim Montgomery has come in, and not saying St. Louis is going to turn this thing around and win 15 in a row and then all of a sudden be a talk of the NHL, but they're certainly showing signs of playing better hockey.
They're playing better hockey, and that's great. They're still not a playoff team. So this is no. You can ask for better than this.
Yeah.
You can ask for better than this. Because once again, they're going to finish in the mucky middle where they're going to think that they don't need to make serious changes.
Worst place to finish, right in the middle.
I'd rather be basement, get the higher draft pick, and also jar management into making some moves instead of just going, oh, we're going to be okay again. This is a fine, okay hockey team, Ryan, when they're playing really well. First of all, you got Dylan Holloway scoring like he doesn't usually score. So some good things are happening right now, and that's fantastic. Jordan Binnington is playing really well, who is a good goaltender. I'm not saying he isn't. But this is an okay hockey team, and now they're winning a few games, and they're going to finish right out of a playoff spot once again. Or if they somehow miraculously, look at the Central, man.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Miraculously, if it does, they're going to get knocked out in the first round, and it's not going to matter anyway. So it's good that they're winning. The coaching change is fine. Jim Montgomery is getting better play out of his players. That's all very wonderful. This team still needs to be tweaked. It needs a couple pieces up front. It needs another blue liner. That's fine. Other than that, they still need to improve.
You mentioned Holloway. He had 9 goals combined in the previous 2 seasons, and now he has 9 already in 28 games and 17
He has
points.
Five in his last 6.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So that's amazing. But it's also uncharacteristic. He's not going to score 40, right?
No, he's not.
So right now in fantasy, play him, stream him for the next 2 weeks, and then drop him.
If the Blues make the postseason, then they're going to be done before they even play game 1. That's kind of where they're going to be at.
Look at the Central. Like, my goodness.
It's not happening.
No.
I'm a little bit concerned about, and I know it's a different, let me just retract. Years and years ago, when some really big names came in out of junior, for example, say McDavid and Matthews and Bedard, say this was year, like 20, 30 years ago, there would be a lot of cushioning, a lot of thinking, okay, do we need them to start their careers in the league, or do they need some more seasoning down in different leagues before they get up to the big dance? That's not the case anymore. These guys can step right in. They could have stepped right in their final year of playing before they made it to the NHL. But one of the keys that you need, especially for these young guys, is you need to surround them, not just with toughness like Chicago has tried to do with Bedard, and they have, but you have to surround them with talent. His numbers are down. Chicago's not playing well. He was left off the Four Nations. Not that that's a big thing.
No,
but if he had a better start and if he was putting up a ton of points, maybe he would have been on. But the point is, I just see the body language. He's frustrated with himself. He's calling himself out. He's trying to push a bit more. I don't want to see this type of talent being wasted on a team like this without getting some solid support around him. And I think that's what's happening this season.
Do you think the coaching change is going to help?
I just supposed to say no. No. They don't have the right person.
It's
don't
a management issue, yes.
They don't have the right personnel around him.
They tried with Taylor Hall. They tried with other players. It's not like there hasn't been an attempt made.
Yeah, and I know it's not easy. I know, like you and I can't just sit here and say, oh, okay, well, let's surround him with these players. Done, just like that. I know it's not easy. Understand that. But when you're into now with Bedard, with what he's doing, Chicago, they're not a good hockey team, Victoria. They're not exciting. He has so much talent. Like the other night was a prime example. I think they were on a, maybe not power play, but it was late in the game, and he took the puck behind his net, went basically through the whole team, set up someone who was, I forget who was a teammate, then they blew the tire, puck went the other way, and then the team scored into the empty net. All the work that Bedard did was for nothing.
Don't you think this is one of those situations, though, that just once it turns around, it's just going to turn around?
No.
Okay.
No.
So then there is reason for concern.
Yeah,
one very curious tidbit. You know, he actually qualifies to play in the junior tournament still.
Oh, I have no doubt. Oh, my
Isn't
gosh.
That wild? That's how young he is my point.
That's crazy. That he's
not going to, obviously.
No.
But the fact that he could suit up on Boxing Day for Team Canada, I think, is really wild.
Wow. Imagine. I'd love him to do it. He's going to have better time there than he is in Chicago.
It almost feels like cheating, though. You know?
Yeah,
like bringing in a ringer like that, even though he technically qualifies, right?
Yeah. I would if I could.
Let's see what Chicago does. Just to wrap that one, let's see what Chicago does next offseason. He's going to be in his third year next year, and then they're going to be talking about deal. They're going to be talking about deal starting July 1st.
Right.
So we're going to see where he's at with where he's at.
Yeah.
That's going to be his decision. They're going to want to sign him long term. He might be like, bridge me up, bro, right?
If they're in the same position that they are now after next season,
I go short
as well. 100%. Because you do not want to commit as much as you love playing, you don't want to commit that length of time to a team, doesn't matter how much money, in case they're going to stink for years, mm-hmm. because that's not good. And you're wasting. Bedard will be wasting his time in Chicago. Have the Avalanche found their fix and goal with Scott Wedgwood? Yes, no, maybe so, perhaps.
He's just coming off a shutout. And he was and he pitched a near shutout because he subbed in for Georgiev against Buffalo the other day too. Yeah. So far Scotty Wedgwood is fitting in Colorado really nicely. It's been 3 games, 1 stunk, 2 were excellent. But if you do that all season long,
yeah.
You're going to win everything. You're going to win in the playoffs. You're going to get to the playoffs, right?
It's kind of like in baseball. If you win every series, win mm-hmm. 2 of 3, win 3 of 4, that's fine. You're not going to sweep them, but you're going to look fine. And the 2 wins out of 2 good games out of 1 crappy game, Georgiev's has 3. If he was in that, he'd play 3 crappy games. That's just where he's at.
He actually had a pretty decent one lately, but your point is made. And of course, I agree with you. So the fact that Scotty Wedgwood is getting this opportunity, the fact that he is seizing it big time, I think we're going to see a little bit more Wedgwood and a little less Georgiev in the next couple of weeks if he continues to play that way. And that's going to be good for Colorado because this is a team that has underperformed to date. They're on the outside looking in, and they do not like being there at all.
I read this the other day. When Scott plays golf, he's confused a lot because he's always between a wedge and a wood.
Oh, no.
Four Nations talk.
Oh, no.
It makes sense, though. Think no? Okay.
Yes, it does.
Right. That's why it's so terrible.
The comprehension of it is not the problem, Brian. That's not what's that issue here.
Four Nations talk. We could go on and on. We'll talk more about this with Emily Kaplan, who'll join us in just a few minutes from now.
I just have one point to make.
Go ahead. Go.
How is Tage Thompson not on Team USA? How is Tage Thompson not on Team USA? When the rosters came out and I just scrolled them really quickly to start, mm-hmm. I actually thought I missed his name. I'll go back and there it will be. And then got to the section of the snubs and he was leading the section of the snubs because no kidding. So what's going on here? Be like, oh, he has injury issues. If he's injured, he's not going to play. And then somebody else plays on the team. I don't get it.
You said last week when we did this, you said, why are they announcing the rosters at this time? It's the, 10th to the 20th of February, I believe, or 8th to the 20th.
It's about that.
Something like that. So we're essentially 2 months away from the beginning. And a lot can happen. My biggest one on this whole thing of any team is Sam Montembeau getting the nod for Canada.
Over Logan Thompson?
I don't get it. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. Thompson has, I believe, he has better numbers than Ottinger. He has better numbers than Binnington. He has better numbers than Montembeau.
Ryan, if Montembeau is in a position to play, Canada's in trouble.
Right. And
that means Binnington and Aiden Hill aren't doing it.
When I had this discussion on the weekend with someone, they said, oh, it's because of the start by Montembeau. That's why he's in. Okay. Well, isn't sports about what have you done for me lately?
Compared to shutout the other night. But yes, of course.
Anyway.
Tage Thompson, man. So here, just to wrap my Tage Thompson rant.
Yeah.
We know that the rosters probably for each team isn't going to look exactly like they do right now because players are unfortunately going to get hurt between now and then. Probably one or two on each squad.
Correct.
Just that's the way the cookie crumbles once you get to that part of the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tage Thompson will be playing for Team USA is my prediction by the time, if he's healthy. As long as he's healthy, because he's got to be the first substitute up front. He has to be.
Yeah.
All right. So we're still going to see him play. It's just maybe this is a kick in the caboose, as you put it, for him to keep it rolling in Buffalo until then and prove that he deserves to be there because he does deserve to be there.
If he's not, you're going to lose your mind more than you've lost it right now. Yeah.
And I'm going to watch some of these games. And I want to watch him play.
Oh, my goodness. There's going to be somebody going to be escorted out of the arena. And it's going to, I know her. Hey, first for everything. Speaking of first for everything, we're going to have Emily Kaplan on next. Haven't had her on before, and this is going to be a fantastic chat. ESPN, she covers the NHL, and she knows Vic, of course. They both do great stuff for ESPN.
She's actually a pretty super person as well, to be honest.
Yeah, fantastic. I've spoken to her once before, probably doesn't remember, but it was during the final last season. She was on the hot stove with Dennis, Dave, and I, and it was awesome. And she's really busy, so very good that she'll give us her time, and you'll get to hear that after this. Bucks and Seven, Ryan Payne, Victoria Mattias, as always, brought to you by Sprotman.
Welcome back to Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Mattias.
Ryan Payton and Victoria Madiash, and we are now joined by the ultimate ESPN NHL reporter, my colleague, even though she's much larger potatoes than I am, Emily Kaplan, who we haven't seen. We haven't seen each other in person in about, we think, 6 or 7 years since, the pandemic interrupted a lot.
That's too long, you two. Too long.
Yeah, no, that is, when you said that earlier, Victoria, it's absolutely insane. My friend used the term, time is squishy recently, so that's right. My new term. Time is super squishy, but I appreciate you guys having me. I'm playing a little bit hurt. Got the classic December NHL sniffles. So apologies for the way I look and sound.
Oh, stop. Super-
hey,
no.
you look and sound fantastic, and we're really appreciative of the fact that you're such a trooper and you're still doing this. I know you feel super under the weather, so, but.
Well, if we go 6 years, Victoria, I can't believe you going.
We'll go on that then.
That's good.
All right,
I like
so
that.
We won't, we'll dive right into it. Last few days, you've been super busy. The NHL has been super busy with storylines flying left, right, and center. Let's start with the Jacob Trouba deal. Not necessarily the deal itself, because we are all very familiar. He's going to Anaheim. They're taking his entire salary. Not much is coming back. That is what it is. But I know that you reported he was very close to going to Detroit. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you know, that was a situation that began over the summer, mm-hmm. when all of this began over the summer, right?
Yeah.
And the thing about New York and the way that Chris Drury, and I think he's getting some messages right now from his boss, Jim Stolen, is acting, and it's pretty cutthroat. And basically, they had to make a business decision of, we've got so many great players in our prime. We've got Igor Shesterkin, Adam Fox, Artemi Panarin, and we just don't feel like it's working. And so we want to shake things up. And unfortunately for Jacob Trouba, his play, they felt like, wasn't matching the salary that they gave him, mm-hmm. as well as the trade protection that they gave him. And so they were looking to move him. Detroit, I think, was a place that he'd like to go. You know, he grew up in the area. He and his wife both went to the University of Michigan. We know about the considerations with his family. That's why he was turning down and using his trade protection over the summer. You know, as he said on ESPN, I made some family decisions over my career, and I would do that 10 times over again. But as it, you know, kind of came to a boil over the last couple of days here, they gave his agent, Kurt Overhart, permission to speak to other teams to try to figure out, okay, if you're going to force him out of town, can we at least find a landing spot that works? Columbus came to him with a trade proposal. He's like, that doesn't work for me and my family.
Okay.
I didn't
mm-hmm.
want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Anaheim, we know, did work out. But Detroit was one of those teams he was really interested in. And I was told by many people that Steve Yzerman was really interested in bringing Jacob Trouba also. The only issue was his salary, right? Mm-hmm. He makes $8 million. And if you look at Detroit's right now, they would have to move money out. And so from my understanding, Steve Yzerman was trying to make the money work. He even might have approached one of his players who has some trade protection saying, would you be willing to waive that to go to New York? And rightfully so for that player, they said, no, that's in my contract. I'm good.
Right.
I want to stay here. And so the Detroit Red Wings were never able to get to a point where they had a trade proposal that they could bring to the Rangers to bring to Jacob Trouba, mostly because the Rangers were just so interested in clearing all of Jacob Trouba's salary.
Yeah.
And that's why it worked with Anaheim and not some of the other teams.
So if that one particular Detroit player has said, I'm game to go to MSG and join the Rangers, then he would be a Red Wing right now.
Yeah, or I think as long as, Steve Yzerman was able to come up with that trade package. And I think there might have been some other considerations. I don't think it ever got to the level where they were able to bring it to Kurt and Jacob. But Steve Yzerman was, I was told by multiple people, really trying to make it work.
Interesting.
It was a messy end to Trouba's time in New York. And as you mentioned, and this has been going on since the summertime. And a lot of people, after this went down, they're looking at, you know, this threat of, we're going to put you on waivers or you're going to get dealt. So it's
so
one
wild.
Or the other kind of thing. And if you take the human element into that, that's kind of tough. You're threatening somebody with what they're, the decision that they're going to make, and they have to ultimately decide what to do. Where do you stand on that? The team didn't do anything wrong, because it's that they're allowed
rules
to do it.
Rules are rules, man.
Rules are rules. But it just, I don't like seeing anything like that happen in sports, any relationship come to an end the way it did.
Yeah. I mean, hockey is cutthroat, right?
Yeah.
And you see so many coaches lose their job. I think it's more volatile than any of the other professional sports. And one of my theories of why, and I borrow this from people I talk to in the league, is that it's so hard to make big trades in this league
mm-hmm.
because the salary cap is so stagnant, because players do get these protections, that when you want to shake things up, the easiest person to say, hey, you're the scapegoat, is the coach.
Of
because
course.
They don't have these type of contracts.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of players do have this trade protection written in. But I think what Chris Drury is showing is, you can have it written in, but we have other methods where we can try to make the moves that we want to move. And morally, is it the right thing to do? I don't think so. I think that these players earn this in their contract. It's a right. It's a privilege to get that type of protection written in, and you should be able to honor it. But we've seen time and time again, it comes to the trade deadline and players are being asked to waive no movement clauses, saying, hey, this team's in your list, but would you reconsider? And it's kind of shady because then it puts the player in a really tough position because we know that players are so deferential. They're team first. Like, they don't even use a pronoun I. They say we or you.
Right.
And so to go above your team then inherently makes you a selfish player. And I think that's the label that Jacob Trouba was carrying early in this year. And it was a burden for him because he wasn't being selfish. He was doing what was right for him and his family. Like, how is that being
selfish?
Which
he had every right to do.
Yeah.
She had every right to do. But in the context of a team, often you're pressured to do something differently. And I think that's just the culture of hockey. I know there's a lot of people around the league talking that they want this to change, that maybe we need to write, you know, more stringent rules in this or just rethink the way that we do business. Because as you see with Chris Drury, he's now made it a habit of this, right? Mm. Like, he, same with Barclay Gaudreau, basically forcing him onto waivers to get claimed by a team that he didn't really want to go back to. Now I think he's made peace with it and it's okay, but that's not really right.
Is Drury hurting himself as a general manager here, or is the Rangers still the Rangers, still the Rangers, and people are going to always want to play for the Rangers?
Yeah, you know, I think it's tough to say because when you hear all of this, you're like, man, why would I ever want to sign for that guy? Like, you know, what is his word good for? At the same time, they're still going to be the premier destination for free agents. It's the New York Rangers. You play in Madison Square Garden. There's a salary cap in this league for how much you pay players. There's not a salary cap for everything that goes on around the team. And so teams like the Rangers and the Toronto Maple Leafs lead the team in the way that they treat players and their families and the amenities that they get and just, you know, the first class treatment that they see both on the road or at home and all of those things. So, I don't necessarily think it's hurting him in the sense that it's not going to be a place where players want to go. I think that they now know when they sign that protection into their contract, it might not necessarily be honored. But the other thing I have heard about Drury, and he's someone that really doesn't speak to the media, so you don't really see him front facing all the time, but he is, you know, behind the scenes, pretty transparent with players. You know, he is a former player himself. I've heard a lot of times of him meeting with guys, explaining things. There's players in the minors wondering when they're going to get the call up. He's been very forthcoming about, hey, here's where you stand in the organization. So there are some other things behind the scenes that haven't really come to light. But right now with these couple examples, I think people are pretty spooked, especially if you're going to sign there with some kind of trade protection.
Or you just have to get a complete total no trade clause.
Right.
It has to be a no movement clause or you're not put on
So the first act that day was on Broadway was Trouba being dealt. The second act was, oh, let's sign Igor Shesterkin to that contract. So we thought we were done with the first one, but no, we finally now know what he's going to make. You certainly knew about this news. Just take us into kind of when you first heard about that personally and talk about the contract too going forward.
Yeah. So, you know, my colleague Kevin Weeks had been chasing in. I was really plugged in. And then as I was working on all this Trouba news, obviously I was speaking to sources that I knew had information on the New York Rangers. And right after Trouba got dealt to Anaheim, it was like one of those messages like, OMG, Igor has signed.
It was OMG. No, it was very OMG. Yes.
No way. No way. So, you know, just like a little inside baseball, your first call is to the Rangers and I call them. I haven't heard that. They call you back a couple of minutes later. That's completely untrue. So you're like, okay, where do we go from here? And that's when I called my friend Kevin Weeks because I knew that he had some ancillary sources and that if the two of us combined our information, we could. And by the time we came back to the Rangers, they were pretty clear that we had the information and that it was good to report. You know, the reason I share some of this inside baseball is that we had the Rangers game that night. They were playing the Pittsburgh Penguins. It was such an important game for them. You know, they were off all week. Like, they needed this game. I don't think it was their intention to release that news that night because I think they were like a little, you know, shy of like, okay, Trouba is one thing. Igor Shesterkin is another. They're completely different entities. Like, we didn't need this cap space necessarily to sign Igor, but I do think that they intended to announce it like very soon after to kind of give the fan base a piece of good news and a piece of good news that they were waiting for. The truth about this contract is they were always going to land somewhere around here. You know, when you look at the way that it's structured, it's pretty buyout proof. The money really makes sense for Igor. His camp had argued that he should be the top paid player on the team because he is the best player on the team. I think every player in that locker room would say he's the best player on this team. Igor is at 11.5. Artemi Panarin's at 11.6. Didn't quite get there, but I think he's close enough. And in the end, you know, he could have made more money on the open market. But remember, the Rangers were always able to offer that eighth year that nobody else could.
Right.
So it would have had to be a massive contract from another team. And I think Igor and his wife, who just welcomed another baby, just stuck it in New York. Like, he wants to be in New York.
Makes sense.
He's comfortable.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, like, this was kind of a no-brainer. Just the timing of it was a little funky.
The timing was very funky. I was actually on the NHL Network co-hosting The Point, and we got to break, Jake Hahn and I got to break the Trouba trade. But then I get on the subway to go home. I'm like, what?
We thought we were done, Victoria.
Yeah. See you later. See you later, Captain. Here's your money, Igor. You know, it was very, very busy. And I know you were very, very busy that day. Okay, moving on from all the New York stuff now. I loved your piece recently about how Team USA was put together for the Four Nations. I love just the reactions from all the players. Chris Kreider's is my favorite. He would have scrubbed floors to get on that team. Mm-hmm. It was just the fact that everybody seems to be incredibly excited about this. The Four Nations Tournament, it's not the Olympics. There's a lot of players who will not be participating, not just from Russia, but your Anze Kopitars and your David Pasternak's. But the players involved seem to be really, really pumped for this, a little bit more than I had anticipated. Are you surprised by that, or is this pretty much what you expected?
I'm not surprised by how excited they are. I think that there was a little trepidation when the tournament was first announced, just because it was only four nations. And so, like, Connor McDavid behind the scenes has always campaigned the NHL, like, I want to play best on best. It's insane that I haven't been able to represent Canada with some of the best Canadians out there in my time in the NHL.
And he's right, actually.
Yeah.
And it he's 100% right.
Yeah.
But then I think he felt a little sheepish of like, okay, well, my best friend is Leon Draisaitl, and he's not getting that opportunity.
Right.
And the reason it's only four is because of the situation in Russia. And they really, you know, haven't figured out a way in international hockey to appease a lot of these European countries. And it was just like, you know what? It's just easier to do four right now. And when we do the World Cup of Hockey, we'll figure out a way to include the Czechs, the Swiss, the German, who really deserve to be there because they've grown so much as hockey nations as well. All of that said, now that we're getting closer and it's becoming more, you know, we see the rosters. This is feasible. Like, this is tangibly happening in our near future. The guys are so, so pumped. And like you said, Victoria, like, just Bill Guerin and Mike Sullivan explaining to me the reactions of guys once they found out they made the team. You mentioned Chris Kreider was like, I will scrub the floors if I need to. I will do anything. Noah Hanifin, who is a seventh defenseman, you know,
let's
that
go!
Was.
Yeah.
So, like, he literally didn't believe it. And then I've also heard about, conversely, some of the players that haven't made the team and really just how bummed out they are. And they feel like they've done everything that they needed to do to prove their case. And it's such a, it's a tight roster. They had to make the decision 2 months out. There's no wiggle room. Some GMs, like Bill Guerin, went to the NHL, like, can you please expand the roster? Like, in IHF tournaments, like, we get an extra two roster spots. And they said no.
Right.
But just how excited everybody is and how much passion they have for international tournament. You know, I was talking to some of the refs over the weekend, like, they're looking forward to reffing this tournament. And they're like, we're expecting playoff hockey. And we know guys are going to get hurt. We know there's going to be scrums. I think the intensity level is going to shock a lot of fans. And I'm just so, so pumped. And I can't wait for it.
My excitement level, sorry, Ryan, 2 seconds.
My excitement level
when this was first announced was like, okay, neat. We get to see in some, you know, international, some best on best, not the best on best across the board, but some of it, and get a taste of it. I was like, okay, this is like, in the last 2 weeks, I've bought tickets to it.
Just let's go, Victoria. We'll another person. Let's go.
Okay, no, we will. Are you going to it?
I will be there. We split it with Turner. I like to say we're the alpha. So we get the USA-Canada game in Montreal, and we get the final in Boston and
beautiful.
A couple other games too, but I'm pumped.
No, I am excited. I'm excited now too. Again, my enthusiasm just ratcheted up about, you know, 75%, because once you do see the names and you do hear about the reactions and you start the debate of who should be on and who shouldn't be, whatever, it's easy to get more involved in it for sure.
And so much of it too is whether a lot of the talk is, well, who made it, but no, it's who didn't, right? It comes with the Olympic Games as well. Same kind of thing. It's who didn't make
exactly.
The team. Let's talk East and West quickly. The biggest story that you have seen so far being played out in the Eastern Conference. Is it the Capitals?
I was going to go there. You know, I've had a couple of their games early on. And, you know, I also have a lot of Pittsburgh Penguins games. And I look at these two teams, and they were rivals for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
It was always Sid versus Ovi. And one of these teams figured out a way to transition and retool on the fly. And that's the Washington Capitals, of course. And they've added all of these players. I remember meeting with their GM, Chris Patrick, before one of their first games this year. And I'm like, all of these guys you brought in, like, is there a common trait or attribute to them? And he's like, yeah, their age. And they're all just in their early 20s. and in a place where they can now surround Alex Ovechkin and John Carlson and what's left of that championship core with the opportunity to compete right now while Alex is chasing the goal record. And I just think that Spencer Carberry, every time I talk to him, I'm more and more impressed. What he does, Ryan, you see it.
It's Jack, like, Adams, Jack Adams.
Yeah, the system that he has on the ice, like, it's funny. I know that, like, the Carolina Hurricanes are like, hey, those are, like, a lot of our systems in place. And the Florida Panthers see some of themselves, too. But also just his people skills and the way that he communicates with players, the way that he gets the best out of them. Like, I see it in just these little interactions. He's so engaging. So I have all the respect in the world for him and what this front office was able to do. And these players who are just playing their butts off. And now you see the Pittsburgh Penguins just kind of on the back end of that being like, hey, oh, we got to catch up. Who has the young players for us? Like, what 20-year-olds are out there? Like, let's just try to win with Sid now, too.
No, it's true. The Capitals have been, and I'm with you on Spencer Carberry. He's impressing me more and more all the time. He reminds me of Rod Brindamore. It's interesting you brought up the parallels with Carolina on the ice. But I think in terms of having a player who will, like, you know, tear a fridge in half for you type of thing, they both seem to bring that out of the players that they have.
And you know what? Rod Brindamore could probably literally tear a fridge in half.
He could. We could hear me out. And I have to give shout out to Darren Drager and Ray Ferraro. They had Spencer Carberry on his podcast. And Drager pulled up his elite prospects when he, one of the reasons I think the guys all respect Spencer is that he went through it himself, right? Like, he was playing in the ECHL, but he had 1 year. Look at his penalty minutes and you're like, oh, he fought for everything he had. And I think that once the guys realized that, I'm like, oh, this is who's coaching us. Like, a guy who actually, like, dropped his gloves and fought for his career. I think that gave him a little bit of extra street cred.
It definitely commands a lot of respect. Okay. So let's turn to the West then. What's the leading story in the West? I'm not going to lead you on. I want to hear what you come up with.
You know, I think we were all expecting the Edmonton Oilers after what we saw from them in the Stanley Cup final just to repeat. And it's been a bit of a struggle for them. For me, like, the biggest surprise has been the Minnesota Wild. I think that as we talk today, if I had to put in my Hart Trophy ballot.
It's Kirill.
I'd have a hard time not putting him number one. And just the team that they built around him. Again, this is a team that we thought was going to be in cap hell for much longer than they were because the twin buyouts. Well, all of a sudden, those come off the books next year. This has become a destination place to play because of the talent they have, because Bill Guerin is running them and everyone has so much respect for him and just his personality and the personality that he's been able to impart in this team. I was just super impressed by them. John Hines is another coach. Like, I had never interacted with him at all. And then when I talked to him, I was like, oh, I get it. Like, I get why you would work here. I have a lot of respect for him now as well. So for me, it's the Minnesota Wild just emerging a lot sooner than we all thought as a team that can make a really loud statement come playoff time.
That's my favorite story in the West too. I thought maybe you might go with the Predators just because it's a great.
Let's be optimistic here.
Let's talk about positivity.
Keep it positive.
I actually have Spencer Carberry's stats up, Emily. So
in 06, I'm talking about
06-07 with Tulsa in the CHL, 157 penalty minutes, and 08 to 2010 South Carolina Stingrays, a combined 258 penalty minutes.
That's amazing. I think when we asked him to explain that, he said there was a lot of game misconduct. I think he was kicked out of a lot of games, which piles up pretty quickly. But shows what it takes, you know. Anyone who just wants to stick around, sometimes you've got to evolve your game. Because I don't think he came up as a fighter. And if you look at him, he doesn't look like a fighter at all.
Yeah. He doesn't at all. And I was actually going to say, this is a little plastic, but he's a fairly handsome man. And usually you get mashed up when you're one of those, like the nose is a little askew and everything is just a little, you know, reorganized on your face. That's the only way I can put it.
He must have had some fighting skills is the only conclusion here.
Or he protected the face pretty well because he's still looking pretty good.
Got the non-bruising face. All right, 77 seconds, Emily. You ready for this? We're going to go through seven questions. You have 77 seconds to answer.
This is fun.
Okay.
Yeah, this is fun. There's some hockey.
I like the disclaimer. I'm ready for it.
Non-hockey. So, and the people we've had on, nobody has done 77 seconds. We're talking half an hour.
One
sometimes.
Person.
No one.
Okay. We're gonna try.
Yeah, for one question they did. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, here we go. Ready?
Okay.
Favorite arena.
Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, it's always the common. Always the common one.
Bell Center, I'm really excited for USA Canada there, but for me, MSG just gives me chills.
MSG.
Big proponent of women's hockey, because why wouldn't you be? Your favorite PWHL team right now?
I like Toronto. I like a lot of their players.
Do you?
Yeah. Oh, wow. It's just some of the players that I love to follow. I'll play all there.
I would not have guessed that.
I know.
Favorite NHL interview, player, coach, whoever.
My favorite all time that I ever did was Louis Domingue at Madison Square Garden, a famous multiple overtime game. He came in as the emergency goalie when Tristan Jarry had cramps. And famously said he had spicy pork and broccoli. Not a great meal between periods, but somehow came out with a W.
That's good.
That is memorable. Who wins the cup this year?
The Carolina Hurricanes.
Really?
Okay.
Favorite place, non-work related, that you visited?
You're a big traveler.
Oh, I am a big traveler. You know, my grandparents in the 1960s, they made a lot of dumb decisions in their life. But the one smart one is they bought land in Cape Cod. So we've got a cottage there.
Beautiful.
My mom got 5 cents for every nail she put in. Like, it is a heart and soul family type of spot. Shout out to JFK for all of those laws he passed in the 1960s to preserve the nature there. It's just untouched and gorgeous.
That's awesome.
My guess was Paris, so I was wrong on that one.
Paris is okay too.
Yeah, Paris is a second. Yeah.
Best restaurant in Chicago that I can afford to eat at?
La Scarola. I grew up in New Jersey, very old school Italian, and this is the spot. Like, you go, there's all the pictures on the walls of all the luminaries that have been there. The owner will come over you and try to give you a tequila shot. Say no to Armando. He's bad news.
Okay.
But no, the food is amazing. Family style. It's classic.
I'm going to make that note.
Making a note of Armando.
Highly recommend.
Last one. Best bagel you've ever had?
I got to go to my hometown spot. Hot Bagels Abroad, Montclair, New Jersey. Anywhere in New Jersey or New York will do. But an everything bagel, if I'm having a tough day, like today I'm having a tough day, a bacon, egg, and cheese would really hit. But really anything.
What's the name one more time?
Hot Bagels Abroad. There's two locations.
Hot Bagels Abroad.
My parents, I love it so much. My parents went to an art fair once and there was a woman making art and they commissioned her to make a painting of Hot Bagels Abroad.
Oh, come
it
on.
Is literally in a strip mall. that hangs proudly in my home. That's how much I love that place.
That is awesome.
Wow.
Emily, this has been great. You're a bit under the weather, but you wouldn't be able to tell it all. So we appreciate this and get better soon. And we'd love to have you back on.
Oh, thanks for sticking with me, guys. You guys are the best. And Victoria, 6 years, not a day longer.
Yes.
Montreal.
Montreal, you two. Montreal.
We can have a bagel there. I'm okay with Montreal bagels.
They're different species. They're different species, yeah.
Exactly.
But they're good, too.
This has been Pucks in 7, available on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.